Welcome to Roco's next program, Hope for Beauty, performed November 16th on Saturday at 5 p.m. and live-streamed at roco.org and on our Facebook page. The first piece, Edward Elgar's Sospiri. A quick intro. Written in 1914 and originally intended as a companion piece to his ever-popular Salut d'Amour, a beautiful and rather light work. Originally, he'd intended to call it Soupir d'Amour, Sigh of Love, but reportedly settled on the current title, which means sighs, when the piece turned out deeper and more heartfelt. Elgar was born in 1857 and was the very model of a proper English gentleman, and his music is often considered to be quintessentially English, though his style is indebted perhaps more to the music from the continent. His Catholic faith, which occasionally caused him some trouble in Anglican England, inspired a number of major works, and he is best known for his first Pomp and Circumstance march. War was on the horizon. Elgar wrote Sospiri in the months leading up to World War I, and while it might be tempting to see this piece as descriptive of the upcoming conflict, historians might remind us that until the Archduke was assassinated and Germany declared war on Belgium, the drumbeat of war was not yet all-pervasive in Britain. Keeping the options open. The piece is scored for strings, harp, and organ, but the harp can be replaced by piano and the organ by harmonium. Since, in the words of one commentator, the organ harmonium muddles the string sound, it is sometimes left out, though you might argue that the string organ doubling creates a classically pleasant English sound. Speaking of which, doesn't this piece sound almost choral? It really isn't out of place performed in a church. For further listening, and for context, listen to the earlier Salut d'Amour. Then, for a deeper dive into Elgar's music, seek out some of his larger-scale music, which allows him to plumb further emotional depths. The cello concerto in E minor and the symphonies are great. Manuel de Falla, El Amor Brujo. The quick intro? It was completed in 1915, 1 year after Elgar's Sospiri, commissioned by Pastora Imperio, a famous flamenco dancer, and not at all a spell in Harry Potter. Premiered in Madrid, de Falla continued to make edits and alternate versions well into the 1920s. The title translates to Love, the Magician. Is it a ballet, soap opera, or a scary movie? For the story, Candela, a gypsy woman, has a problem. She's being haunted every night by her late husband, who had died some years earlier and murdered by one Lucia. Every night, she must dance with the ghost, Danza del Terror. A fact that Candela's village knows and is both scared of and intrigued by. Turns out, plot twist, that her husband was having an affair with Lucia. This is a big problem, and the nice people of the village suggest a solution. They work up a hectic ritual fire dance to expel him, but it doesn't work. So Candela has an idea. She tricks Lucia into coming over one night, using Candela's current boyfriend as bait. When the ghost arrives, she pulls a switcheroo and exchanges true love's kiss with her new man. The magic of this Disney moment breaks the spell, and the old man disappears, taking with him Lucia. How long until this inspires a weekly show on Netflix? A Rain in Spain. De Falla lived at the perfect time. His career peaked right when the world was becoming more fascinated than ever with Spanish culture. Around the turn of the 20th century, composers from France, like Debussy's Iberia, Ravel's Rhapsody Espagnole, to Russia, Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Espagnole, and beyond, were writing music tinged with Spanish influences, and de Falla was able to provide the real thing. For further listening, de Falla arranged several of the dances for solo piano. Listen also to his El Sombrero de Tres Picos, the Three-Cornered Hat. Gia Cancelli, a little Danieliad. Film music. This piece is adapted from Cancelli's score for the 1986 Georgian film Kintzadza, which follows two earthlings transported to a barbaric alien planet, Pluk, whose social oddities resemble those of Earth. Much as in Gulliver's Travels, the Plukians are separated almost arbitrarily into two social tiers, the lower of which is forced to be comically subservient to the upper. Darmok, and Jalad at Tanagra. Quick content warning, this piece contains strong language. The good news is that the language is Plukian. The Plukians generally speak only two words, Ku, which means, well, everything, and Q, which is sort of a general swear word. You'll hear the orchestra occasionally chant these words, so be prepared to cover your kids' ears. Through the Looking Glass. At times, there's a delicate sensibility to Cancelli's sound world here, a sense of formal balance. Here especially, it's almost as if he's channeling Mozart. Albeit Mozart on another planet. Say, for instance, the planet Pluke? Then, it's as if Cancelli flips a switch, and we find ourselves in the middle of a traditional Georgian dance. Cancelli passed away, unfortunately, just this last month at his home in Tbilisi, Georgia. His music is truly unique, and you can't really go wrong with any of it. For further listening, I recommend seeking out Chiaroscuro and V&V, both scored for violin and orchestra. Bruce Adolph's I Too Bleed in Hope for Beauty. A quick intro, this piece was commissioned and is going to be world premiered by Rocco. Tribute to a heroine. The composer writes, Alma Rosa was born into the musical royalty of Vienna. Her uncle was Gustav Mahler, and her father was the world-renowned violinist Arnold Rose. And she herself attained some fame as a violinist before the Nazis came to power. She became the conductor of the women's orchestra at Auschwitz, and by the power of her spirit and determination, the ensemble became a path to survival. Through this orchestra, Alma Rosa saved the lives of nearly 50 prisoners who would have otherwise died in the Nazi gas chambers. Alma died of an illness, probably botulism, shortly before the camps were liberated. The title of this piece, I Too Bleed in Hope for Beauty, is a quote of Manka Zvalbova, a young Slovak doctor at the Auschwitz hospital and a close friend of Alma. The quote is Zvalbova's way of describing the message conveyed by Alma's violin playing. I Too Bleed in Hope for Beauty is a tribute to Alma Rosa and to the enduring power of music, which even the worst circumstances imaginable offers hope and beauty. Mixed colors. Adolph's tonal palette here might seem understandably to skew toward darker harmonies, but listen to how he brightens things up by carefully mixing timbres. In the opening, the harp cuts through, and there are some beautiful moments where it is doubled by the vibraphone. Keep an ear out, too, for the solo violin, a moving tribute to Rosa. For further listening, there is an encyclopedic series of CDs called KZ Musik, documenting music by composers in the concentration camps. The music ranges from symphonies and Lieder to cabaret and jazz, from better-known composers like Victor Ullmann and Gideon Klein to some whose names the producers aren't even sure of. It's a haunting experience listening to these pieces. Brian Nabors, Lubilo. Meet Brian. Quickly becoming well-known in the orchestral world, Brian has recently collaborated with the orchestras of Detroit and Cincinnati. A recent winner of the Rapido Composition Contest, his season sees the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra premiere a work of his. In his own words, commissioned in honor of Rocco's 15th season, The 15 Project, Lubilo is a two-minute fanfare exploring pure musical manifestations of joy and celebration. Explored through the work are flourishing gestures and flamboyant textures to capture the free, energetic attributes exuded through joy. Each respective instrument has its part to play in creating this tapestry of exuberance. About the title, Lubilo is Latin for I sing and shout joyfully. For further listening, Michael Torkey's Javelin, a similarly exciting fanfare, and head to Brian's website to listen to another of his new pieces, a fun concerto for Hammond organ, vocal quartet, chorus, and orchestra. Leda Fink, Quiescence. Meet Leda. Leda is a Baltimore-based musician who balances her creative work between a number of fields. She is a chamber musician with the experimental duo The Witches, the Bergamot String Quartet, and the jazz ensemble Atlantic Extraction. She's an improviser, a violinist, and a composer. Her music blends experimental styles with classical, jazz, and the folk music of the Blue Ridge Mountains. She writes, "When we can't see something, we often fear it. We know there are bears in these woods and that they probably won't hurt us, but we jump at the slightest stirring. Contrary to common belief, bears don't actually hibernate. They enter a state of quiescence, a dormancy from which they still rise frequently during winters. So here we are, waiting in a calm, still aware of the fear of the unknown rising slowly and gracefully from a hidden den in a beautiful forest. A little rumble. I love the subtle addition of the bass drum to the string ensemble here. Rather than the usual Sousa-esque heartbeat, the bass drum here adds a dramatic but delicate touch of color. For further listening, speaking of quiescence, Max Richter's Sleep has gained a cult following the last few years, and visit YouTube to hear Leda's beautiful, idyllic, and subtly virtuosic afternoon elegy for solo violin. It's a terrific piece, and I found myself drawn in immediately. Do listen. Jason Gerardi, Compress, Ignite. Meet Jason. Jason's background as a brass player in New England community ensembles helped shape his desire to write music of value to both amateur and seasoned listeners. His music is energetic and forward-thinking, but allows the listener to enjoy the varied hues of the sound itself. He currently lives in California. The 15-second summary. On its surface, Compress Ignite draws inspiration from the cycle used by diesel engines to harness combustion for energy. A piston rises in a chamber with vaporized fuel, gradually compressing the air-fuel mixture. As it's compressed, the mixture gets hotter and hotter until the fuel combusts, forcing the piston back down and powering another piston in the engine to repeat the process. Musically, the piece mimics this cycle with sections of proportional shifts in meter, referred to as metric modulation, followed by rapid accelerandi, seamlessly returning the piece back to the original tempo. The piece bears a passing genetic resemblance to Bizet's famous farandole from L'Arlésienne Suite No. 2. Most notably, in both pieces, a tenor drum is used to drive the momentum forward. A farandole is a folk dance in which participants form an interlocking line and wind through a space, much in the way that the pistons of an engine interlock to propel a vehicle forward. Day job is inspiration. One may wonder how a piece about engine cycles fits the prescribed theme of hope for beauty. My day job is at a junkyard in the California desert where I walk amongst the twisted, burnt, and in some cases bloody remains of vehicles, assessing their damage and totaling them for an insurance company. It is depressing work. Outdoors in the heat, interacting with people who have just experienced a tragedy. Despite this, one can't surround themselves with cars without marveling at the engineering that makes them work, especially when their inner workings are splayed out in front of you. There's a kind of beauty in the way that you can see how these parts were meticulously designed to work together. One can't help but see the similarities in which we as musicians collaborate to bring pieces to life. For further listening, Honegger's Pacific 231, which describes a locomotive. On SoundCloud, hear Jason's fascinations for percussion quartet and Balinese gamelan. There you'll hear a similar rhythmic drive, though it's a bit more measured than Compress Ignite. Thank you for listening, and do tune in to our concert November 16th at 5 p.m., either live, in person at St. John the Divine, or on roco.org live streamed, or our Facebook page. Thank you.